Radio Influence. The future is now. This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Valor Hour, a look into everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thanks for joining us, and remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. This week, we look back at a big weekend at Cage Fights at the Cowboy, and we look forward to a big fall lineup of fights. I am joined, as always, by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, Cage Fights at the Cowboy was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. That was our first time doing that venue, and definitely a success. Had a great crowd and some great action. You know, we had a lot of upsets, really. You know, a lot of the favorites on paper didn't deliver. So, you know, it was one of those nights where you just didn't know what was going to happen. I'd venture to say that the last four fights, probably the favorites. Well, no, not sure. But three of the last four fights, I would say that on paper, the underdog won.
Very closely matched fights. And, you know, that really goes to show that in mixed martial arts and cage fighting, there are never any absolutes. Anything can always happen. Well, we are also joined tonight by another co-host. It is photographer extraordinaire, Alan Poole. Alan, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, man. Great to be back on here. Great to talk about these bar battles, man. I had a blast.
Well, we've got bar battles and so much more. Let's go ahead and get on into some news. It's the official recap of Cage Fights at the Cowboy. And we're going to play a little fantasy matchmaker as well for some of the winners. We start out in the dark prelims. At 5:30, it was Logan Gabbard taking on Evan Ledford, and that was juniors Muay Thai. I believe both of these young men were 14 years of age, and it was in the featherweight division. Gabbard takes the round three TKO by liver kick, but it was a very entertaining fight to kick things off.
Yeah, I thought so. These kids really went out there and threw down hard and went, you know, got into the third round. Ledford showed a lot of heart. He took a lot of kicks to the body, and Gabbard, had already had a fight. You know, he did lose in his debut, but he'd already been out there one time. So there's something to be said for just kind of shaking those nerves, especially for young men like that. So both guys had very good accounting for themselves. Logan Gabbard gets that first win, and now he's 1-1. And he is a very eager young man. He wants to fight every show. I mean, if we had a teenager already, you know, from 125 to 145 pounds, he would compete every show. So props to him for being so, you know, gung-ho and about it. And, you know, hopefully he sticks with it and keeps getting action, you know.
Alan, what was your take on these youngsters?
Yeah, I don't mean to be the negative Nancy on this one, but I just remember them kicking each other in the balls like 1,000 times.
We always have a lot of nut shots on the kids, it seems.
It's every time. I guess that's something common with the inexperience, you know, like I don't know what it is, but something about young guys kicking each other in the balls is, it just happens a lot. And that's really my takeaway from that is make sure if you're young and you're gonna kickbox Muay Thai, make sure you have the best cut possible.
Well, Tim, anyone you can think of that you would like to put Logan Gabbard in there with right off the top of your head?
You know, there's a few guys, there's a few kids that I think would fit the bill. Dustin Koppel's got a couple young men, and Ben Harrison's got a couple young men that would be a next kind of like next step up type thing. And, you know, you've got young Hagee, and we've got a few other guys floating around out there that could be good for him. So, you know, he's young. He's still got four more years before he's old enough to do MMA, but those are the kind of kids that they stick with it for that long. You never know if you get your next Chase Bowell.
Undoubtedly. Well, moving on, our under dark prelim matchup was in mixed martial arts competition. It was Chris Bond taking on Roger Artrip, a grudge match, if you will. And it was at a catch weight at 150 pounds. Bond takes the round one TKO, but a good little scrap.
Yeah, I thought that this one, you know, I think Bond was pretty like adamant about not wanting to win by submission, because I think after they fought the first time, and you know, R-Trip was a little beefy about him, you know, submitting him and not just striking it out. Bond, he was begged for the rematch with Chris for months, and Chris didn't really want to do it. And finally he decided he'd give him the rematch. And I don't think he wanted to win by submission. I think he wanted to make sure he got a striking finish. And again, you know, it was R-Trip that was going for the takedowns. If I can remember, he was the one shooting in there, and Chris was looking to keep it standing and looked good. And May have got his record up to even now, you know, it's another loss for R-Trip. And I think that's like seven straight or so for him. And, like I've said in so many times, I think he needs to be at 135, maybe lower.
Yeah. Alan, you had a bird's eye view of this one.
Yeah. I didn't realize that there was really the grudge match there, but it makes sense, because I remember after Bond put that beat down on him, when the ref called the fight, he just went, "Oh man." Like, he was super upset because he wanted to keep beating on him. So that makes sense now. That clears that up. But I thought it was a great showing from Bond. I mean, I really like Bond. I like Chris. I text with him every now and again. He's got a warrior's heart, and you know he's going to bang when he goes in there. You're not going to be bored. So, props to him. And I thought he looked great.
Yeah, and he's on a little win streak of his own. Tim, who would you consider putting him with next?
You know, I think a good one would be between him and a guy that is also just barely on the upside down, but real close to being even. He's fought tough guys. I think him and Logan Neal would be a really good one.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, moving on to the undercard, it was Tim Blevins versus Corey Austin, both debuts, competing at 205 pounds, Muay Thai rules. And it was Corey Austin getting the round one KO. A lot of fireworks there to kick off the undercard, Tim.
Yeah, that was, you know, we've been waiting on the debut of Corey now for a while. He's a hard guy to keep matched. He seems to be in that mold, if you will. You know, there's just certain guys you have a hard time keeping opponents in there for. And we finally got, Tim Blevins stepped up there and took the fight. And we didn't really know what to expect from Tim. We didn't have a lot of information on him. Definitely a well put together guy. But it being his debut and Corey just being a little more polished, he was able to hit work. You know, that's one thing about these Thai rules now is, you know, these guys get into the clinch a lot of the times now, and they're just really not expecting those knees, and the knees to the body really put him down. And I think for the count, I think that was a straight KO. I don't think he answered the 10 count.
Yeah, and it's definitely another world from standard low kick rules kickboxing. Alan, your take on this one.
Yeah, man, this is my first opportunity to see Corey, you know, get in there and bang. He's got power. You know, I just assumed he did with all those traps he's got. He's got from his head goes like almost like straight down to his shoulders because his traps are so big. He's a big old dude. But, man, he was just banging away at the midsection there. Lots of power. He looked a little tight to me. Like, I know it's your guy, so I don't want to say anything. He almost looked like he had so much muscle that he was a little bit tight, but my God, if it hits, I mean, they're probably going to go down. Again, he's another guy that I'm looking out for because I love the Randall boys, the Austin, I guess, the Austin boys, both of them. I guess we'll talk about his brother here in a little bit.
Well, sure. His first time under the lights, so he might have been a little tense too, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that is, you know, it was the first time, and I actually talked to Corey afterwards, and he was like, man, he felt like he was sloppy, and he was like, man, I was sloppy, and I just hope that it looks better. I said, man, you got to take what you got. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's, you know, when you hit that stage fright for the first time and you deal with it, you know, it makes you a little bit better at being a performer, if you will, you know, and being under the lights and that
he's
sort of thing.
He's young, too, right?
He's very young. He's 19.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
He works really hard, but props to Tim Blevins, man. He came out to throw. I mean, he got right up in Corey's face, and again, you know, Corey utilized those knees, but Tim came to bang, and we really appreciate him accepting the fight and coming out, because a lot of people had backed out already. Tim, any ideas for Corey Austin?
You know, I guess it kind of depends on what you decide to let him do next. If it were Muay Thai, I think what if we could work out the weight, I think him and Wes Monarch would be awesome. I think that'd be just a war, a brutal war. And but it might be one that I'd rather save until Corey gets enough to lose the headgear. And then if it were to be MMA, you know, thinking of another kind of young up-and-comer with not too many fights yet, I think him and Bailey Cooper could be a really fun one.
Yeah, I think that's those guys are definitely both characters. Talking about Corey Austin and Bailey Cooper, I mean, very, you know, contrasting looks for sure, but you know, young bucks. Moving on, speaking of Wes Monarch, he scored a big victory over Dylan Calhoun, unanimous decision at 185 pounds Muay Thai rules. And it was a battle. I mean, it went the whole distance, but Monarch, man, he throws for the fences. That right leg kick and that big left hook really made an impact.
Yeah, man, Monarch's one of those guys that he's very unassuming. You know, he you might not even know he's there to fight if you happen upon him, you know, before or after. Really nice guy. And, you know, just when he gets in there, though, man, he throws hard. Everything he throws is hard, and he's got a great chin, and he comes forward, and he's just really hard to back up. You know, Calhoun, I think, was trying to finesse him a little bit more, trying to out-technique him, but he just got bowled around in there, really, in a pretty clear decision for Monarch.
I have a feeling that Monarch does a lot of work with Terry Bowman. Anybody that I've spoken with, I knew Jeremiah Huskins, you know, from way back. He sparred with Terry for years, and he just said, you know, Terry is a lump of monster. You know, he comes forward, and you know, to be able to spar with him, you've got to be all man. And so I assume that, you know, Wes Monarch, he's prepared himself in the School of Hard Knocks that way.
Alan is who introduced us to Wes Monarch.
Yeah, he worked with me over at the newspaper. He was the only person there that kept me sane, you know, because I was always, you know, going after MMA stories, this and that, and you know, nobody understood what I was trying to do, except, you know, Wes came in and I noticed he had a black eye, and I was like, oh, we're going to be friends. And it turns out, yeah, he, you know, and I got him hooked up with Tim, and, you know, the rest is history. But as far as Wes goes, I mean, he had a huge improvement to me over his last fight. I mean, he learned and he applied what he learned, which is don't gas out. And you know, his technique was even sharper. He could do this, you know, if he keeps at it and keeps learning. He seems to have a pretty steep learning curve. I mean, he's grabbing it pretty quickly. So props to him, and you know, good on you, Wes.
Tim, you know, you already mentioned Corey Austin as far as one potential. Any other ideas for Wes Monarch in the middleweight with 185 pound division Muay Thai?
I think Dylan O'Sullivan is another one that could be just freaking great, because, you know, Dylan's so good and such a showman. And, you know, Wes is kind of more of that blue collar, just, you know, pack your lunchbox and come forward and bang with such a good chin, too. I think that would be one that I'd probably be willing to throw a strap on.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. Very good matchup. Moving on. Well, Alan, do you have any suggestions?
Man, I liked what, as far as Wes goes, I like Corey. I like Corey eventually. You know, I can't really think of anyone else or that really matches up as well. And I'm sure as hell not as qualified to do that as Tim is. So I just go by what he says.
I think Wes has got one more until the headgear comes off, right, Tim?
Yeah, he needs one more. You know, so I mean, if we were to do him and Dylan, we'd most certainly want to make sure we got that headgear up.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, moving on, Stephen Tanner versus Randall Austin, 145 pounds under Muay Thai rules. Austin takes a unanimous decision. Let's go ahead and get on into it, Tim.
And that was, you know, going into it, I kind of thought that was going to be one of our best fights. And in my opinion, that was definitely our best Thai fight that night. Very evenly matched, you know, and both guys had their moments. Both guys had, you know, landed very good, solid blows. It was marred with a bit of, I don't want to say controversy, but there was a lot of throws that ended up happening. And honestly, going back and watching the footage, it's hard from a lot of the camera angles to exactly tell, you know, if some of the throws were good or not. But regardless, it got just kind of carried away. And, you know, we probably could have done a better job in keeping that one, I guess, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say, but kind of settling that one down before it got to where it did. But at the end of the day, we still had a great fight. Both guys were, like I said, had their moments. It was very close. Randall Austin gets the decision and stays undefeated. Tanner still had a very good performance and is still going to be a good prospect to keep an eye on.
Alan, talk about it.
Yeah. I hope I didn't ruffle any feathers in my little Facebook post about the throws. And to be honest, I don't even know what the rules are. So if anyone got upset with me, just understand that I don't even understand what the rules are. All I know is that you can't hip toss. I went back and reviewed the footage. The first throw that Randall did, I don't know what that is, but it looked really cool. So if it's legal or not, I don't know. Okay, but as far as the first hip toss that I saw was actually from Tanner, and after that, it was like Randall was like, "Oh, you want to do judo? Okay, I'll show you some judo." And it didn't go well for Tanner. You know, that's my take.
And if anybody wants to go back and review the footage and judge for themselves, it is on Flow Combat right now.
Well, you know, I want to just, you know, dial it back even more so, you know, coming from, you know, being a coach of Randall's, the whole idea was to get a tough fight for Randall. You know, he was 2-0 in Muay Thai going into this. He'd had one mixed martial arts bout, and none of the matches had gone very far. So we were looking for someone to put him with. And, you know, that would give him a tough challenge. And we'd seen Steven Tanner in action. We knew he came from Bullman's, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I've already mentioned that when we were talking about Monarch. And, you know, they're just known for being a very hard-edged, technical, you know, pure kickboxing type gym. And I'm hearing they're getting ready to start actually pushing more into mixed martial arts competition as well, which makes a lot of sense. But particularly in the kickboxing area, they're very good. And so, you know, going into it, of course, it'd be Muay Thai rules. Randall worked very, very hard on his clinch work. And, you know, he studies a lot of tape. He does, you know, as far as with the trips and so forth, because he does have a judo background. So he works hard to try to work within the rules of the trips and so forth. But at the same time, I agree, things got a little crazy. Just all the way around by everybody in the fight. I think that, you know, Jason King's a tremendous referee. I think that switching over from K-1 rules to Muay Thai could be a little bit concerning or, you know, difficult. But I'll say this, you were, Alan, you were asking what exactly are the rules. It's very hard to tell. And you can actually look in a lot of testimonies from people involved in Muay Thai to say that it's really hard to know exactly what is legal and what's not. Particularly one thing that really stands out is that, you know, that you can't hip toss, and which we did see in the fight later on, you know, into the fight and so forth. And it did get a little wild, but it's really hard to know and hard to tell. And, you know, when you get into one of these fights, it makes it kind of wild. And in the end, it almost looked like a sand shell matchup by the end of it, because these guys were both flying over each other's shoulders. So regardless, I think that both fighters, you know, there's no major database that these win and loss records go on. In the end, both of these fighters leave being better fighters and stronger, and it will be better in their next outings.
Yeah, no doubt. Both guys had good showings, and it's only going to make them better. Like you said, I mean, they're fighting tough kids out here early, and so, you know, whenever when they step up to the next level, it's not going to be shell shock like it is for those that, you know, that tiptoe their way through, you know, their first 5-6 fights.
Tim, what would you like to see next out of Randall and even Steven? We'll put both of them up there.
Yeah, you know, I think depending if you were talking about Thai or MMA, I think a good, interesting fight for a Thai fight would be potentially Doug Morley for Randall. You know, that's a guy that is the striking coach there at the UFC gym in Murfreesboro. He hasn't fared as well in MMA, but his striking's pretty solid, and he's a really technical TIE fighter. So I think that would be a very good test for Randall. If Randall were to go back to MMA, you know, off the top of my head, maybe Saeed Fatea from Nashville there. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I think he is, I think he's 1-2 is his record, but, you know, trains with a good group in Nashville MMA, would be, you know, about the right experience level for Randall. As for Steven, man, trying to think of what would be a good one for Steven Tanner. I think potentially something like maybe a Zach Fox or maybe even Nick Roberts, you know, who we'll talk about here in a little bit. I think those could be really interesting matches. Either one of those guys could be good. Or and honestly, there's set. You know, we're about to talk about these matches later, but several of the guys that we're in, that we saw later in the card would be great next matchups for Tanner, like a Creighton Chevelle as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You have any ideas on that one, on possible matchups, Alan?
Oh, I say rematch, man. I want to see him do it again, because I would let him get that bad blood out eventually. Maybe not next, but I just like to see a rematch between the two. That's what I foresee.
Very cool. All right, moving on to our next matchup. Justin Winchester taking on Christian Holman at 165-pound catch weight. Holman takes it round one TKO, gets it to the mat. Tim, talk about it.
This was one where we didn't know much at all about Holman coming in, besides he comes from a great camp there with Ian Lawler and Adversity Training Center in Somerset, Kentucky, known for having well-conditioned, you know, good grapplers. And, you know, this guy we saw was a high school football player, athlete, and it was just kind of, they call him the bulldozer, you know, and that's kind of what he is. He's kind of jacked up guy and really strong. Was able to overpower Winchester and get the stoppage to strikes. I don't think Winchester absorbed too much damage, but he just wasn't doing enough to, you know, improve his position.
Alan, your take?
Yeah, I thought it was a great showing. I remember at the end of it thinking, well, I need to see this guy face a little stiffer competition so I can get a bearing for how good he is, because he looked tremendous to me.
Tim, speaking of what is next for Holman, you've got some insight on that.
Yeah, you know, it may be announced within the next freaking hours, honestly, but Holman's going to turn right back around and he's going to get his step up in competition for sure. He's going to be on the Myrtle Beach show here at the Fight Night at Crab Catchers, you know, October the 7th. He'll be taking on Fitness Edge undefeated Zach Sanders. So that's going to be, you know, definitely a big step up from Winchester. Not to fault Winchester at all, but Sanders very, very talented and you know, very good on the ground. We saw him win at the first of the year. He submitted Chase Olsen in Saudi Daisy. So it's two undefeated guys, and we're definitely going to have a good scrap on our hand there.
Undoubtedly. All right, moving on. We saw Cecil West taking on Josh Whited, and that was at 135 pounds. Mixed martial arts rules, and it was Cecil West with the round one RNC. He sunk that one in deep. Tim, your take on the fight?
Yeah, you know, same thing as before with Holman. You know, West, not a lot was known about him. We knew he was a little bit longer in the tooth there in his 30s at making his debut. We knew he was going to be a grappler. Again, coming out of a great team there, the Adversity Training Center. Josh Whited coming out of Temple Underground Boxing. Again, we didn't know much about him besides the fact that, you know, most likely we expected him to be a striker. And this definitely was your striker versus grappler. You know, Whited was definitely like a, you know, a big strapping guy and in good shape, but couldn't stop the takedown and, you know, was trying to, you know, buck out of some bad positions, just kind of, you know, muscle his way out and almost had his way out at one point. But West hung on, got those hooks in and got that rear naked choke there in the first round without too much, you know, taking any damage, really.
Alan, what say you?
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of like a caveman going in and just like grabbing someone and putting them down, grab mount and was like smash, smash, smash. And then the guy turned over and basically rear naked choke. So it was very caveman-esque, if that makes any sense. I thought it was a great fight.
Cecil West back in action October 7th, right, Tim?
Yeah, you know, it's another one we'll be dropping here any time now. I just saw the graphics come through, and he's going to have a step up as well. You know, he's going to have his hands full against another 1-0 guy, Young Buck out of Fitness Edge, and Austin Coleman, a guy that I'm a big fan of. that we have talked a lot about on here. He fought in Nashville, made his debut, and had a great showing there. And just, you know, I remember us noting how composed he was to be, 19 years old, very composed young man. So you're going to have, it's going to be, and not calling Cecil an old man by any means, but, you know, will he have that old man strength, if you will, to kind of overpower the young buck in Austin Coleman? That's one that's going to be really good.
Roman Evans taking on Nick Campbell. It was at 145 pounds, mixed martial arts rules. Campbell takes the round one TKO in somewhat of an upset.
Yeah, you know, this was one that I knew could get interesting because I knew, you know, Paul was really high on Campbell and Cooper. Those were the two that he was pushing the hardest. And he, you know, was very adamant, you know, this kid's got the goods. And we had a hard time locating Roman for a moment. I was worried we were going to lose that fight, but, you know, he surfaced there and we were able to, you know, keep the fight on as promised. And, I think, as you said, a lot of people probably peg Roman as the favorite, having the experience and training in the past with Lutus and O'Sullivan's and, kind of came in flat here. I think, honestly, he just didn't have that fire that we've seen at him in the past. Immediately shot for a takedown from, you know, pretty far, and he got it, but just couldn't really contain Campbell. Campbell was really squirrely, real squirmy. And, Campbell just kind of kept coming out the better spots in the scrambles and finished him off with a TKO there in the first round. And like you said, a bit of an upset. And another guy, Campbell, that we're going to see him. We already announced it, but, you know, he'll be at Fight Night at the Crab Catchers as well.
Alan, very exciting matchup here. What was your take?
Yeah, you can tell me. Did they get a point taken away? Didn't one of them get a point?
I don't think there was a point taken away. I know there was some. Was it a strikes to the back of the head? Maybe that Campbell, and then they stood him up, and maybe I don't think he took a point. He just lost his not good position essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember it being ferocious, right?
They may have.
Yeah, very, very good matchup. And of course, Tim, as you mentioned, Nick Campbell returns to Fight Night at Crab Catchers, or Rumble on the River, if you will. And and we may even see Roman Evans there as well. Nothing's been announced, but there is talk. But moving on, undoubtedly the biggest upset of the night, Bailey Cooper taking on Chris Buttrey at a 200-pound catch weight. Cooper takes the RNC round three and really shocks the MMA community here in the Tri-Cities.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, to preface this, Cooper is immediately going to be falling into that group of hard to match guys / hard to keep a match in for type guys. I want to say that Buttrey was at the least his third opponent, but maybe his fourth opponent in this whole process. And guys would come in and then they'd fall out. I'm like, what is going on? You know, this guy's a debut 185, you know, why can't I keep anybody in? And then he shows up and he's like 6'6", you know, he's huge. He's really freaking tall. Chris Buttrey steps in on, you know, literally an hour's notice. Probably he's coming in and buying a ticket. He had his stuff with him because he just had a feeling, you know, that he may get called on to fight, and stepped in for us. And, you know, big shout out to Chris for stepping in and making sure that Bailey was able to fight. He had a big crowd there and he didn't want to, leave him stranded there with no fight. Buttrey comes in at 3-0 already into that fight. So it's a massive step up from the guys that we had Bailey matched with originally. So props to him as well for adjusting on the fly and taking a big step up in competition from what they had probably expected for his debut. That said, it was a great fight. It was fight of the night, I would have to imagine. And, you know, Buttrey arguably was winning. You know, he definitely got the first round, but, you know, fighting at 200 pounds is not ideal for him. He's ultimately probably going to be a 170. If he really dials in, he'll be at 170 and a good one. But he started to fade there in the third round, and Bailey was very resilient. He absorbed all the punishment that Buttry had to throw at him, and then still had the gas tank there in the third to find that submission with a rear naked choke.
You know, Tim and Alan, the one thing that kind of stood out when Chris Buttry fought Christian Cottle, Cottle got a hold of him and was smashing on him, and he became composed. He was able to weather the storm, and he was able to wear his opponent out and then capitalize. And I think that it sort of happened to him in this case. You know, I think he saw that the guy was a debut. They needed somebody to fill the spot, and probably walked in believing, once I get him in my spot, then I'm going to be able to control him. What he didn't take into account was the squirreliness and the resilience of Bailey Cooper. And it could have been that, you know, if Chris hasn't been training in fight camp, that, the amount of energy required to put that kind of pressure on, you know, took its toll. And that could have turned things around. Now, I'm taking nothing from the performance of Bailey Cooper, because I think it was outstanding. I think down the road, a rematch between these two guys would be outstanding, though. Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, of course, props to Bailey Cooper for pulling that off. It's awesome. But like, how big do your balls have to be that you can be walking in to, you know, have a night of entertainment, and then someone says, hey, man, you want to throw a mouth guard and a cup on and fight tonight? It's like, yeah, sure. You know, that's just bananas to me. The balls on Buttry. This is crazy to me. And to me, he was whipping his ass the whole fight. He had top position. I mean, he was just whipping his ass. But the dude was 6'6". I couldn't believe they were, like, when I was taking his picture, when he walked up, I couldn't believe how big he was. But, I mean, hey, you know, props to him, you know, for getting the W. I don't want to take anything away from Bailey Cooper. You had a great showing, dude. I look forward to seeing you fight again. And keep your head up, Chris, and quit taking fights on 30-second notice. Don't.
And again, you know, Bailey Cooper is a guy that really demonstrated a full array of an arsenal. You know, we're going three rounds in his first fight like that. You got to see the ups and the downs. You know what I mean? And he has tremendous reach, obviously. That goes without saying. But he was also delivering those shots straight. He was doing a lot of things right, you know. And you forget about some of that because of the – you know, the situation that kind of, you know, formed around this fight. But I'm very excited to see him back in action. And Tim, we're going to see him back in action October 7th.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. So many of these guys are going to have quick turnarounds, but so many had impressive performances and are just excited to keep rolling. Bailey Cooper is going to fight Austin Cox in his next win, which Austin's 0-1, but a very tough guy, good wrestler. He was in just a war at the VFW event.
One of the bloodiest fights I've ever watched.
Just a bloodbath, you know. Essentially, just to recap that one, Jonathan Blackwell comes out and breaks his nose with a head kick in the first 10 seconds. But, you know, it's not elementary from there. You know, Cox was in the fight, was taking him down, and, you know, ended up getting finished. But he is not going to be a walk in the park for Bailey Cooper. That's going to be a good fight.
All right, well, moving on to the main card, it was Zach Fox taking on Nick Roberts at 155 pounds, advanced Muay Thai rules, and it was Roberts with a round two KO, but not without a battle on his hands.
Yeah, that was a fun one, man, and it was, Fox is going to be a hand, you know, Fox is 0-2 now, but he's going to be a handful. He's a deceptive 0-2, really tall, rangy guy, and was doing great. I mean, he had a knockdown against Roberts earlier in the fight. I can't remember if it was the same round or not, but then he had a point deduction as well for a knee to the head. I don't think he meant to do it, but it definitely, like, affected Nick. And so that kind of, like, neutralized, you know, his knockdown. But so whenever Nick landed, he hit a liver kick, I think, in the second round.
He hit two spinning back kicks, and uh-huh. They both appeared to have landed in the liver, and really it crumbled Zach. You know, and Zach, you know, what can you do? Once that liver gets rattled, that's it, you know?
He couldn't answer the 10 count, so knockout win for Nick Roberts. Props to him for showing a lot of resiliency after he had taken a good amount of punishment at one point during the fight, but pushed forward and hit some tricky spinning kicks and got that knockout. So, you know, props to both guys. That was a good fight. And, you know, hopefully we get to see Nick Roberts staying more active. And Zach Fox is very another one of these kids from that Lee Kickboxing Academy. He's very gung-ho. He's very he wants this. And so we're going to see him turn around quickly again. He'll be a guy that we'll see at Crab Catchers. He'll be taking on a guy we don't know much about in Burrett Craven. You know more about him than I do, but they're going to have he'll have a tie fight with him there and see if he can't get that first win.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, what was your take on the fight?
I was just excited to see the spinning back kicks because I don't have any like really good solid pictures of people doing the spinning back kick. So, yeah, I almost kind of got one, but he was out of focus, out of the way, I guess. But it was a great showing from Nick. Man, he looked he did take a little bit of a beating, you know, there for a little bit, but he stayed composed and just landed those nasty body shots. I think he finished him off with one of those spinning back kicks. I mean, he just basically just like crumbled, you know, after that last one.
I'm going to ask you both, who would you like to see Nick Roberts in there with next?
Man, that's, you know, as we mentioned earlier, I think Steven Tanner could be good. I think as busy as Zach Fox is trying to stay, he would probably fight every show if he had the opportunity to, you know, and then potentially you know, we'll talk about him here in a moment, but potentially an Austin Kurtz or someone like that. So, you know, there's lots of fights right now. There's a lot of guys kind of doing this tie thing here between 45 and like 65. And so there's lots of pretty cool matchups right now floating around.
Yeah, and Muay Thai is very popular right now. I mean, the fans are coming out to watch it, and that's what's really cool. And speaking of fans coming out, the next matchup was the Flow Combat highlight of the night for sure. Dylan O'Sullivan taking on Austin Kurtz at 175 pounds advanced Muay Thai rules. And O'Sullivan with a round one KO, but Austin Kurtz, he didn't want to go down, or rather he didn't want to stay down in this matchup.
No, man. You know, props to Kurtz for going out there against a much more experienced and accomplished kickboxer for his kickboxing debut. Kurt's a very tough kid and has been in there with some really tough guys. So props to him for going in there and really, you know, never quitting. You know, I mean, he took some really hard shots, got dropped and kept getting up. So showed a lot of heart there. Real big fan of Austin's, but Dylan really put on a show as always. You know, it's you can come to see Dylan O'Sullivan fight. You're always going to get your money's worth because he's such a character and a showman, and this was no different. Very crowd pleasing and fan friendly style of fighting, and lands that knockout, and he's back. You know, after you know, the hiatus, he is the Soul Snatcher is back, and hopefully he will stay active. And there's just all kinds of appetizing fights for him as well.
Alan Poole, talk about it.
Before I talk about Dylan, I just want to, you know, give props to Kurtz for, you know, he went out on his shield. I mean, he is absolutely not a punk bitch. You know what I mean? He took his beating like a man. He got up when he could. He fought on as much as he could. So props to you, dude. Now, as far as Dylan goes, this is my first experience with this Irish kid. Man, he was a blast. He had the crowd hyped up. He had me hyped up. He had himself hyped up. I mean, he had, you know, it was like a little party when, you know, when he shows up. I mean, I'm not saying it's like McGregor or anything, but I mean, since he's Irish, you know, and like he had, you know, I don't know. Everyone just loves Irish people for some reason.
He's certainly like a professional wrestler. What do you guys think is next for him? You know, you mentioned Wes Monarch. I think it'd be a tremendous fight, but there are a lot of options.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think, so the bet, you know, there's so many, you know, Monarch's one that I think would be really good, but Monarch needs one more before he can go to the advanced set. So, you know, I'd like to see Wes get another one in before that. But, you know, as we spoke earlier, you know, another good fight potentially would be O'Sullivan and David Robbins, I think, would be awesome. And also, you know, we had one other one we were talking about earlier that would be so good. Who was it? We just talked about it earlier.
For Dylan?
But yeah, it was going to be a big main event. Must not have been that big, huh?
You'll get it later.
Yeah, right. I'm sure it's coming to me. But yeah, man, I mean, there's lots of options there for Dylan. I think that would be, just a lot of fun fights. Especially as he kind of can get a little bit lower, even if he can get around to like 72, that's really going to open up, you know, some fun matchups.
Undoubtedly. All right, moving on. Creighton Chevelle taking on Anthony Grasso. And that's Bushido versus ATT Asheville. 160 pounds, advanced Muay Thai rules. Grasso with a unanimous decision, but it was a good bout. Really competitive action.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I stepped out for a moment on this one. And so I only got to watch it on video. I didn't get to see it live. But, you know, I think on paper, a lot of people probably tagged Chevelle as the favorite. Very good footwork and very technical fighter Chevelle is. But Grasso just came forward and threw with volume and was just stayed in his face and kept backing him up. And really, Chevelle could never really find a rhythm. So great performance by Anthony Grasso getting a unanimous decision in, a good action fight.
Exactly. I mean, and I'll give my take on this one. Creighton, is a guy that is, like you mentioned, he's a footwork kind of guy. The mistakes that I saw, aside from Grasso being, like you mentioned, a guy that told forward and pressured in, he took a hard shot and he delivered right back. But for Creighton Chevelle to be able to minimalize that, he needs to maintain that range. He's tall. He has good reach. But it seemed like Creighton was willing to close the distance, you know, doing the flying knees and getting on the inside. But once he got on the inside, Grasso had the advantage. And Grasso never let up. And so it allowed him to get ahead round after round and take that unanimous decision victory. I think that I'm very interested to see both of these guys back in action very soon. Alan, what was your take on the fight?
Man, there's no way I can follow up that. I can't follow what you said. Let's just go with what you guys said. That was like the most informed. I was like listening, like, oh yeah, well, okay. I was entranced into what you were saying. So I'm just going to concur with you.
Well, cool. Let's get right on to it. At 160 pounds, maybe moving on down to lightweight. What is next for Grasso?
Man, from the sounds of it afterward, I think he was talking about, like, you maybe taking a break and just doing some grappling. So I'm not sure. We'll wait and see if his camp decides he wants to jump back in there. But if so, you know, I think that there are, like we said, so many guys just right in this little wheelhouse here of, you know, 155, give or take, that I think would be good matches. And, you know, potentially Stephen Tanner, you know, like we mentioned earlier, I think would be a good one for him. Or Chevelle, either one, I think would be good. Or Nick Roberts, you know, maybe try to avenge his teammates lost there in Roberts and Grasso.
Undoubtedly. Okay, moving on here. One of the matchups I was really looking forward to, Hunter Thomas moving down to flyweight to face Diego Bautista at 125 pounds. Mixed martial arts rules, Bautista with a unanimous decision victory. Talk about it.
Yeah, you know, Bautista really wanted to redeem himself after losing to Clemens and just was, you could tell he was really dialed in and just focused and, you know, just adamant. He wasn't going to leave without the victory. Hunter Thomas just, I think the weight cut to 25 really zapped him, you know, and side note, Hunter did make the 125. Diego was off by like 4 pounds. So, Hunter, I think that weight cut really zapped him. He just didn't quite have the pep in his step and the speed to keep up with a true flyweight, which is, 135s are quick, but 125s are so quick. And, Hunter just seemed, a step behind the whole fight. Neither guy really had the other, you know, near a finish or hurt, but Bautista just had well-timed takedowns. He always was able to make sure that he would, lock down the rounds at the right time, and it's a good win for him to bounce back.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think he stole it with the takedowns really, really well. Like, he hit him at the right time, and he was able to keep Hunter on his back for a majority of the time. And like you mentioned, you know, whether or not the weight cut played in, when you're a bigger, like a bantamweight moving down into the flyweight division, you almost have to, where you're used to being quick and quicker sometimes than your opponents, you have to put, where you lack in quickness, you have to apply pressure, you know, and that was something that Hunter didn't necessarily do. He was willing to go tit for tat with Batista. I think Hunter Thomas should have, you know, got in there and mixed it up a little more dirty, got in close, because Batista, you know, he was throwing the kicks and then shooting off of it. A very, very skilled competitor. We already knew that, but he was able to, you know, really control as a flyweight should. Still props to Hunter Thomas. He's one of my favorites. Now, Alan, what was your take?
No, I just say props to Batista on that. It just looked like he was more aware of, I don't want to say how to win the fight, or like he was, I don't even know what category to put that in. It's like his fight IQ. Yeah. He had a higher fight IQ. And to me, that's what won the fight is, you know, his fight IQ.
And side note, if you noticed, you know, Hunter was without his coaches. He had a buddy there in his corner, but that's two fights in a row that Hunter has fought without Jeremiah Gurley in his corner and two losses.
Right. Now let me ask you this with Diego, what is next there? Now, of course, the post-fight interview, I spoke with him, and he mentioned the Clemens fight, but he didn't necessarily call Jacob Clemens back out, though I assume he would definitely look to avenge that loss. What is your take, Tim?
I don't see that rematch happening, because I think Jacob's so close to turning pro. I think they may do one more. I mean, I can't speak for them. I don't know what they'll do, but I would imagine he's one more very difficult fight away from turning pro, which he'll want, you know, an elite amateur test, I would imagine, or they may just turn him pro. I mean, Clemens is of the level to be a pro. That said, I mean, you know, 125 is still kind of wide open out there. So, you know, there's still a lot of interesting matchups potentially for Batista, although he hasn't made the 125 now two times in a row. So we'd probably be looking for him to go to 35, at which point I think that Abamayi would be a great match for either one of these, because I think Hunter will be going back to 35 now. Mai's going to be going back down to 35 from competing at 45 the last time. So I think he would be a good next match for either guy.
Anybody that stands out to you, Alan?
No. Yeah, caught me off guard. Sorry.
All right. That's okay. Moving on. Jared Short taking on Caleb Lankford at 185 pounds, mixed martial arts rules. And it was Jared Short with a unanimous decision, but a very entertaining fight with a few close calls in there. Two contrasting looking characters, you know, physically, but really they both brought a good fight.
Yeah, this was a really good one too. Both guys had their moments. Both guys had have the great wrestling backgrounds, and Short was just kind of able to impose those takedowns when he needed them. Lankford always threatening, you know, but never could catch the submission. And Short dropped him at one point too, if I can recall. So it was a good performance by both guys, and a very tough test for both guys coming off of losses. Short is back on track now, 6-1 he is, and he'll fight for that Warrior title here in, I think, next weekend maybe. I expect him to probably win that one as well. And Caleb Lankford is probably the most dangerous 2 and 3 that you could hope to run across right now.
Unbelievably powerful, too. I mean, really, both of them are. But what do we, I guess, Jared Short, he's already booked. I mean, he's getting ready to fight for a belt, right? He's a Warrior.
Yeah, he's fighting against Justin Collette, I think, next weekend for that Warrior strap. So, you know, he's 6-1 now, and not taking anything away from Collette, but I expect he'll be 7-1.
Alan, what did you think about the double backflip, or rather the backflip and then the assist?
The assist is a nice guy.
I have a picture of that, and it is a sad, sad spectacle compared to the double backflip. It just looks awful. It's good for blooper reel material. I need to go ahead and put that out tomorrow.
Great character.
Yeah, it was funny as hell though. But anyway, I did want to say, does anything bad come out of Viper Pit?
Like, they're all tough.
They're all unassuming too. Like you could walk up to these guys and you wouldn't think, oh, that guy could whoop my ass up and down the street. But yeah, he could.
There was a time when that team was considered almost like an independent group. you know, because of where they come from. A lot of people kind of discredited them for their abilities and so forth. And then, you know, then of course the Beverly brothers just got in and started beating everybody that they came across. And then Short was the same way. Tim, when you and I saw Short the first time, I mean, we thought there was no way he wins that fight. I think it was against Pennington up there in Knott County. And yep. Dude, Short goes out there and is relentless, man. He puts on a tremendous performance. And you are absolutely right, Alan. That team really has it together. Donald Nice and the whole crew up there, they are doing something very, very right. They train very hard, and they've developed their fighters the right way. And it really changed the way people, you know, their perception of a team that comes out of a rural area, because those guys are very well groomed. So undoubtedly you are correct in that manner. Moving on, Paco Maris taking on Greg Hopkins. And that was for the Bar Battles Welterweight Championship. Hopkins with the round one KO. A lot of back and forth in just a very, very short amount of time.
Yeah, man. You know, Paco comes out, lands a glancing head kick that definitely had Hopkins, you know, off kilter for a moment. They go to the ground for a bit, and during the scramble, during one of the breakaways there, Hopkins unleashes and connects on a vicious right uppercut, and that just folded Paco up, and that was that. Neither guy had a bad performance. Paco was looking pretty good up until that point, but Hopkins now 4-0, has won three straight in the span of about 6-7 weeks, something like that. He's really wanting to stay busy, you know, and he's going to be, he'll be fighting for the Valor 155 title. We haven't announced it yet, but he'll be fighting for the 50. He wins the Bar Battles title there, 170. He'll go to 55 to fight for the belt, in Chattanooga, October 21st. He'll be taking on, another undefeated guy, Michael Fortner, out of American Top Team Gwinnett.
Yeah, that's going to be a very, very good fight. Again, props, as always, on your matchmaking, and I'm very excited about that. You know, Paco is my boy. But at the same time, going into this, I said it from the start, Hopkins is a great guy, and he's a talented fighter, and that's the reason, you know, Paco wanted that fight. So, you know, if you go down, you go down in a blaze, and, if you're going to go down in a blaze, it settles the sting a little bit whenever it's somebody that you respect. So, that being said, Alan, your take on it.
Yeah, I knew within 15 seconds of the fight that somebody was going to be knocked out. I mean, they were just slinging leather. I mean, you know, one of those ones where they just kind of step in the center and just they're going to bang it out. Like somebody's going out. And it just happened to be Paco this time, because he did land a nasty shot that almost put Hopkins out there in the beginning. But it was a hell of a fight.
Hopkins is one of these guys where he's very unassuming as well. You know what I mean? You know, he's put together. You can tell he's strong. And like we say all the time, you know, he's a wrestler. But, you know, he's knocking guys out there.
Kind of a baby Fedor.
Yeah, kind of, you know, and doesn't have the fancy trunks. And, you know, mom and dad's out there in his corner, and it's a family affair. And he's going out there and still beating guys. So I think guys are not to ever even try to say that Paco or you guys overlooked Greg. But I think a lot of the layman fans up until now maybe have been overlooking Greg some.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, dude, it's only been 7 weeks. You know what I mean? God. So what are you going to do? I mean, if you blink your eyes, you would have missed his entire rise. So, well, moving on to our main event, and it was a big one, Jordan Owenby taking on Lance Abbott for the very first Bar Battles Cruiserweight belt, and possibly one of the first cruiserweight titles in all of mixed martial arts. And it was Lance Abbott who took the second round TKO and stunned a lot of people. Others weren't so surprised. What was your take, Tim?
Man, I know that Lance was strong and is very dangerous, but I thought on short notice, he certainly was still a pretty good underdog against OMB, whose wrestling has shown to be, you know, so good. And like we talked about, he really kind of dominated Charles Philpott his last outing, who's another guy that, you know, we're high on, and he made it look easy. So I really thought his wrestling might be too much. But, you know, Abbott has just improved so much since the last time we've seen him. He's a guy that's already been tested in the fire with, you know, Doug Williams and Khalil Boyd, and just tough match. He's had, you know, tough matches. So this wasn't his first tough opponent. he was able to really, he wasn't really able to stop the takedown so much. I mean, it seemed like OMB was getting the takedowns pretty quickly, but he could not, he couldn't control him. And it didn't take Lance very long at all to get up. And, you know, after the, I would say with about 30 seconds to go in the first round, you would have had OMB winning that first round. And then Abbott really started to touch him up and hurt him right at the end of the first round enough to where maybe he stole the round. And OMB never really recovered, it seemed like, coming out into the second round, and Abbott pounced on him and got that TKO.
Alan, what was your take?
Yeah, I think there may have been a discrepancy in power between the two, or I'm not sure what it was. It's just weird seeing somebody with so much strength that they can just basically be in any position and then just kind of stand up, you know, just be like, excuse me, I'm going to take you off of me and I'm going to stand up. You know, that's just not normal to see. And that's what it looked like to me, that he was able to just to get back up or stop basically whatever, you know, his opponent was doing to him.
But, Tim, what do you? Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say.
Tim, what do you think is next for Lance? I mean, he had said he you know, maybe looking for you know, another matchup and then possibly turning pro. What would that title defense look like in your estimation?
That's a good question, man. I think that it's interesting because, you know, when we're talking about 225 pounds now, so we're, you know, it's a brand new kind of thing. I think there's a few intriguing matchups out there. Like, you know, I don't know if we could make John Hall come up to 225 or not, but I think that would be certainly interesting, to say the least. I think that would be a good one. Potentially, trying to think of.
Is there heat there with Lance Abbott and John Hall? Has there been talks about that fight before?
I'd like to see it. Not to my knowledge. And, you know, they're both in that same little area there.
I know. So, and I know that's why it surprises me. We've never heard about it we have heard about it and I just forgot.
It's weird that they're not with the, I mean, two big guys like that in that same area, not in the same camp.
Yeah, I know. Well, that does it for the official recap of Cage Fights at the Cowboy. Now moving on to some national news, upcoming events, and so forth. Of course, the biggest news out there, Jones versus DC, number two, that decision has been overturned by the CSAC due to Jones' second doping violation. Tim, is it a surprise?
Ah, man, I guess I can't. I guess you can't say it's a surprise, but at the same time it is, because you're just like, how could it be? You know, like, how could you even think that you may get away with it at this point? It really sucks, you know, because, you know, you started hearing all about it. And then there was like some talk about like one of the samples coming in good, and thought maybe it was like a false, you know, alarm or what have you. But it looks like it was legit, and that sucks. Who knows what they'll do now with the title? Will they give the belt back to DC, or is it just vacant?
You got to give it back to DC. How can you not? I mean, he deserves it. He did. He lost to an opponent that was competing illegally. So if you don't give it back to him, then it's a travesty of justice, in my estimation.
Yeah. What a shit show.
Yeah, but it's killer, man, because that's a, you know, your champion has lost two times in the eyes of the fans, even though unfairly. Yeah. You know, it kind of, you know, puts your mindset, you know, whereas the 205, you know, the light heavyweight division, a lot of times was considered to be the strongest division. Now you're kind of like, it keeps you wishy-washy, you know, so it's really unfortunate that it happened. Alan, what do you think?
Man, I'm just disgusted by the whole thing. I mean, I I'm trying not to go overboard, but at this point, I mean, I can only give someone so many chances. I was already super sketched out after the whole car wreck thing, you know, where he hit the pregnant woman and then he ran and then grabbed his drugs and then ran again, you know. And then now, you know, like, it's just, it's frustrating.
I'll tell you, man, I'll say this. When you, the slippery slope began when he was able to openly discuss cocaine and the use of cocaine as the champ without any kind of repercussion. Yeah. And so why would you, you know, expect anything less, you know, than PED use when you're, you know, you're accepting that he's using cocaine, recreational drugs like that, you know? So it's, you know, I'm not saying, I'm not, you know, bashing anyone, but I'm saying that, you know, I mean, there comes a point where you put your foot down sooner than later, so you don't end up with something like this. Because now it's affected the entire division, you know, the entire sport, if you will. And so it's annoying to me. Moving on, Johnson versus Borg has been moved to UFC 216 October 7th after a last-minute cancellation at UFC 215 this past Saturday. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, you know, that was supposed to be the main event this past weekend for the pay-per-view, which was already kind of like underwhelming, you know. But Borg pulled out with some sort of illness or some such the day before, I think, maybe 2 days before. And they went on without it, and I'm sure it you know, in a pay-per-view that was already struggling, I'm sure that didn't help. But he's going to be moved on to the October 7th event, though, and that will now play second fiddle to Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee, and kind of, you know, boost that pay-per-view some, since it doesn't have to, you know, much better than having to carry it on its own, most likely now.
Yeah. Well, moving on, UFC Fight Night 116 out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on FS1. Of course, that goes down this weekend, and it features Luke Rockhold taking on David Branch. Now, of course, Luke Rockhold 15-3, Branch 21-3, a lot of numbers there headlining this card.
Yeah, you know, it's the return of Rockhold after he got knocked out by Bisping his last time out, and from everything I've been watching, he's really got a chip on his shoulder. You know, he's coming back hard, and has been training this time, looks like, with Henry Hoof down there in Florida, changed up his training camp a little bit, and taking on David Branch, who it's his second fight back in the UFC. He was the World Series of Fighting champion in two weight classes, I think at 85 and 205. And he won his return, not known to be a really exciting fighter. He's kind of a grinder, and he'll certainly be the underdog here, I think, to Rockhold, who I think with a win will be right back in that title picture.
Alan, any thoughts on this one?
No, I concur.
Okay.
I go too.
On the undercard, we see Mike Perry taking on Alex Reyes. Of course, Mike Perry needs no introduction. Reyes jumps in on a 3 days notice after Thiago Alves pulled out Wednesday. Tim, what do you think about that?
You know, that was probably the fight I was looking forward to the most. You know, Thiago Alves and Perry were going to throw down, you know, but I don't know much about Alex. I know that he's a King of the Cage champion. He's making his UFC debut, and I think I read somewhere that he's won 12 in a row, which would mean that he started his career 0-2. So, you know, I'm sure he's stoked for the opportunity. Mike Perry, one of the most entertaining, polarizing guys out there. He's always looking to, you know, to bang hard. So, you know, short notice, man, we may see another highlight reel knockout.
Undoubted. Now looking on down the card, of course, we see Hector Lombard taking on Anthony Smith, Gregor Gillespie taking on Jason Gonzalez, and then moving on down the card, a name that we're very familiar with, Felipe Arantes taking on Tennessee native Luke Sanders. What is your take on the rest of this card?
You know, it's not bad. I'm excited for it. I think that, you know, Lombard fights are always interesting. He really needs a win here. And, you know, he may have the best style to kind of stifle Anthony Smith, who will be dangerous, you know, early. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Luke Sanders, Nashville guy, one of our Tennessee reps in the UFC, very exciting fighter, coming off his first loss ever in a fight that he was dominating, honestly, and got caught in a knee bar, you know, after winning every second of the fight up until that point. I know he'll be wanting to redeem himself here against a tough Felipe Arantes, who, you know, is very experienced and, you know, a well-rounded guy. But, yeah, I still got to go with our guy, Luke.
Absolutely. Well, moving on real quick, I wanted to touch on Next Level Fight Club going down this Saturday night as well. That's going to be in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's going to feature a pretty tough main event. Alex the Spartan Nicholson, four-time UFC vet, taking on Demario Dennis. Of course, not only is he a professional mixed martial arts fighter, but he's also a glory vet under K-1 rules. And both of these guys, big monsters, taking on tough opponents, excited for this one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good fight, man. That's a pretty big fight with you know, big, entertaining, strapping. What is that, a middleweight?
Yeah, that would be a heavyweight fight.
Oh, they're heavyweight. Lord, okay. I've seen Alex Nicholson fight in the UFC. He fought at an event I was at, I want to say, in like Sioux Falls. He's an exciting fighter. You know, he's a banger for sure. I'm not as familiar with Dennis, but you know, you said he's a glory vet. I guess he's going to come to bang too. Big guys.
Yeah, I mean, and I could be mistaken. It may be a light heavyweight matchup, but I'm pretty. I mean, you look at some of the guys that Demario Dennis has fought: Chris Barnett, Chaz Morgan, who is a beast. He's huge. The Spartan, Alex Nicholson, he's also fought Chris Barnett as well. They've been in with big, heavy handed guys, and, I'm excited for it. And I think it'll be a good one. Now on the undercard, we're seeing Chase Gamble, who is a Next Level Fight Club, you know, prospect. He's a guy that is really epitomizes, that promotion, taking on Alan Stewart that we know very well. Below that, Hannah Cyphers taking on Nicole Smith in WMMA action.
Yeah, you know, we know Alan Stewart, him and Gamble. That's an interesting fight. You know, that's a hard one to call. I think, Gamble's got great wrestling, which, that could potentially be Alan's weakest, attribute. But Alan, very heavy handed, knockout power, good submissions and great camp, you know. So it's two good camps going head to head. Man, that's a good one. That's a really good fight. I'm not as familiar, I'm familiar with Hannah Cyphers, but not familiar with her opponent so much. I know I've heard good things on Hannah though.
Well, it's going to be a great lineup from start to finish. And, that pretty much rounds out our official news. And, you know what that means, right, Tim?
Let's do it.
All right. That means the official Valor Hour Q&A segment, where you, the listener, ask Valor Fights President Tim Loy your questions, and he answers it on air. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Number one, were you disappointed to see Borg pull out of his fight with DJ?
I was indifferent, man. Honestly, I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't really see him, having a real good shot at victory. You never know, but it's just not, I really just didn't care.
Okay. Well, fair enough, man. Honesty is the best policy. Mm-hmm. If you were in the UFC shoes, would you schedule the fight again as they've done for UFC 216, or would you move on from the fight? Be done with it.
I'd probably try to move on from it. It wasn't really getting a whole lot of fanfare already. It was almost like a formality kind of thing. And it was, Borg was the one that pulled. Had it been Demetrius that pulled, then maybe it would be different, you know.
All right. Well, fair enough. Question number three. After Thiago Alves pulled out of his fight with Mike Perry, do you have any suggestions about how we can cut down on the fighters pulling out of these events on fight week?
That's if anybody can help with that, let me know, because I haven't figured it out yet. And we deal with that every show. It sucks. It's just the nature of the game. And no, man, there's no magic formula there. If the UFC hadn't figured it out, then I sure as hell don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Tim, which UFC fight are you most excited for on Saturday's card?
I got to go with our boy Luke Sanders, just because I get excited watching, guys that, from our region get those opportunities there on the big stage. It makes it gets me more ramped up. So I've got to say Luke Sanders fight.
All right. Well, your final question of the night, switching gears a little bit. Are you watching Canelo and Triple G on Saturday? And how much do you think that card will affect UFC viewership this weekend? And I'm going to add something to it. You got any dough laid down on that one?
Man, I mean, honestly, I don't know that the wife's going to go for $200 in boxing pay-per-views this month. I'm sure I could probably scroll my Facebook feed and watch. And I will be interested to see how it turns out. I got to go. It's hard to fade Triple G. You know, that guy is a monster. He's a machine, so I got to go with him as far as my pick. But the rest of the card, I just don't it doesn't intrigue me that much. And with the UFC being on the same time, I'll be more than content and entertained.
All right. Well, that does it for this week's Valor Hour Q&A segment. Remember, listeners, send in your question, and ValorFi's president, Tim Loy, will answer those questions on air. Tim, thanks a bunch for this one. But now it's time to move on to the interviews. We are joined by Don Kettner, owner of Crab Catchers on the Waterfront, quite possibly the best seafood on the entire Grand Strand. And this October 7th, he promotes Rumble on the River, mixed martial arts there in Little River, South Carolina. Don, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Casey. Appreciate you, buddy.
Well, we're really excited for the event coming up October the 7th, man. It's going to be Fight Night at Crab Catchers. First event that you've ever promoted, so we're really excited to get out there and bring bar battles and work together. And, you know, the card's really coming together nicely. We've got, some really good fights lined up. You know, talk about the experience so far. You know, like, you have a background, I guess, in MMA. You do some training yourself. You know, maybe just kind of give the listeners, a little bit of your background and kind of why you're interested in MMA and kind of what kind of made you want to do this.
Sure. Well, I did fight one time before I messed my back up about 7 years ago. Won that one, wound it again, but I got old. I coached high school wrestling for 16 years, been wrestling since I was 6 years old, and Marine Corps infantry. Just combat sports is always something that I've enjoyed. Then I met local favorite Amos Collins, and he kind of took me under his wing, and now I just go around and I still train pretty much well. A lot of the people on that card, I've been working with them. And like Casey said, we've got awesome seafood. Probably, I don't want to toot my own horn, but it is probably some of the best in the Grand Strand. So now we want to put on a show too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really, really cool. I've been to Crab Catchers several times. Of course, you were part of the Team MMA battle event that I hosted up there last year, earlier this year, rather. And, you've always been a huge supporter of the sport just in general. But, man, we talked a little bit back in January, and you said, man, it'd be really awesome to promote here. And I looked around, and I was like, where would we do this, And you pointed out to a vacant lot. And then all of a sudden, the gears started turning. And so now it's going to be a tent party, which is really, really cool. I just have to ask you, are you going to have enough security to keep the gators from crawling in there and getting after the fans?
That depends on how high the tide is, but they don't eat much anyway. We'll just stick them with the heavyweight fighters. They'll be fine.
Or cook them up.
Yeah, it should be an awesome spot. I mean, you saw it. I think every MMA fan is going to love it. How can't you? You're going to walk out. I mean, as soon as you exit the tent, all you're staring at is a Little River waterfront. I mean, it's pretty cool. And I've never seen an MMA event inside of a tent before.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome time, I think. And, I can attest that the food at Crab Catchers is second to none, man. I mean, it is so good, and they give you so much of it. And without a doubt, if you're in that area, it's one of those things you can't miss. And I think that it's going to be kind of a nice little bonus for all the people that are there in the area for the fights that night to have such good food so handy. I'm sure you're going to make it you're going to make it as easy as possible for these folks to get in on some of that good food.
Oh, without a doubt, we're running a restaurant all day as well. MMA is not going to interfere with the flow of the restaurant. So, I mean, even if people are watching this, we'll let them back in, obviously. Walk down, go get some food, come on back. Not a big problem. They'll all be wristbanded. We'll figure all that out. And the only bad thing is the fighters. I mean, they got to wait till after they fight to eat the stuff.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. That's going to be hell on these guys. Until they're able to, but it'll be well worth the wait. I can assure them they'll have a great feast with you guys, I'm sure, after they're able to partake. What's it been like so far? Just the whole experience of, kind of getting out and doing something different and, planning an event unlike something you've done before.
All right. Compared to the restaurant, crazy, hectic, and just a learning experience, really. I've really enjoyed it. I've met a lot of different people through Casey, Tim. Meeting those faces right off the bat was, awesome. Great relationship. We're going to continue that. And then actually going out and speaking with a lot of local business owners, we've had such tremendous support on this thing. Little River Chamber of Commerce jumped on it with us right away, took me under their wing and went and introduced me to everybody in this area. Kind of crazy to see the outpouring support that we've had on this event already.
You know, it is so much, you know, having been involved in MMA for the years, it is so interesting when you see a location, you know, again, going back to the venue, but just the waterfront as a whole. I grew up going to Myrtle Beach as a kid, and I knew South Myrtle Beach. You know, sometimes we'd be up in North Myrtle Beach, but Little River is a place that I was kind of introduced to several years back, and it is so wonderful. It's like a completely different world. Very, very beautiful. And, you know, just particularly that little stretch there, that little waterfront stretch that you have, you know, tell the listeners a little bit about that, because, you know, I think that a lot of people will be coming into town. If they're going to check out the fights, I think they would be extra interested in checking it out and making a little vacation out of it as well as the event itself.
Oh, without a doubt. And you're completely right. South Myrtle, Myrtle Beach, even North Myrtle is a whole different world compared to Little River. You step into Little River and you're stepping into, you know, the heart of commercial fishing and the heart of fresh seafood. Everyone looks up at Calabash. Well, you know, watch our boats come in, watch us fillet that fish, and you'll see where the seafood's really at. Come down to Little River and check that area out. Completely different. Commercialized Myrtle Beach is not where we are.
Very, very cool. Well, real quick, Don, I want to give you a chance to give any shout outs. You already mentioned the chamber and some of those local businesses, but just, you know, your final comments to the fans that might be coming out there, and also all your social media plugs. And that's not just for the fighting event. That's for Crab Catchers on the Waterway.
All right. Well, for us, I mean, obviously the fights you got to come see, and having the opportunity to have the restaurant right next to it, I mean, you're going to get a heck of an MMA show, obviously, teaming up, you know, with bar battles. That's what they do. And then you're going to be coming to check out the food, because it's only 100 yards walk from the tent. So I'm not even really going to plug the restaurant. I want them to taste it. It's not about seeing it. It's not about what I can tell them. Once it hits your mouth, then you really know what you're in for. And same with MMA. You know, once you get in the mouth, you really know what you're in for. So... That's really it. I'm just ready for a great show, man.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Don Kettner hosts Rumble on the River October 7th. Get your tickets now at events.com and then head to Crab Catchers for a great meal. Don, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you all for having me. Have a good night.
We are joined by Lance Abbott, the new Bar Battles Cruiserweight champ. He captured this last Friday night at Cage Fights at the Cowboy. Lance, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate you guys.
So it's the first time we've had you on the show before, man. So just to give our listeners a little backstory, you know, Lance, he stepped up on short notice, as Casey said, to main event the show at Electric Cowboy here this past Friday. He is, you know, this was actually his fourth attempt at a title. Lance has been fighting for, you know, attempting to get that title under his belt now for, you know, his last several fights, and has been in there with some really tough guys like Casey's cornered against him now with Doug Williams, of course, with Khalil Boyd, just fought some really tough dudes. You stepped up on, you know, a week's notice tops, maybe not even quite a week, to take on a really tough guy in Jordan Owenby, who's got great wrestling and, you know, was undefeated coming into this. You came up in weight higher than you've probably ever fought before. And in that really, you know, you showed a lot of strength there. Everybody knows you're a strong guy, but I think people kind of expected you to maybe burn out a little bit or gas being fighting as heavy as you were, kind of being on the shelf for a little bit, but you didn't. If anything, it seemed like Jordan kind of burned out first, trying to hold you down there. And, you know, so props there for sure. And, you know, just talk a little bit about the fight. Talk a little bit about, you know, stepping in there on short notice. It seemed like you've been training. Obviously, you didn't just step in off the couch. You know, you were, you had been in the gym.
Yeah, I've been in the gym since about beginning of July. So that gave me like 2 months of, I mean, I've been going 6 days a week, like used to when I went to Bushido. I would maybe go 1 day a week. So I've really dedicated myself to training and fighting. So I've been going there. I'd go Monday through Saturday. I'd train about 4 hours a day. And so I was prepared either way for a fight, but I didn't know it was going to be this soon. So, I mean, we've been really going, working on striking, my jiu-jitsu, we've been working on that. And I feel like I came a long way since my last fight. So, I mean, I still got a long ways to go, but I'm excited to see where I can go from here.
Well, Tim mentioned that, you know, like you said, that you were up there in that cruiserweight division. That may be one of the first cruiserweight belts in the United States. You know, that was a newly implemented weight class. And, you know, did you find that you were much stronger than you ever have been? I mean, did you feel a lot stronger at the 200 pound mark than at the 200 pound mark or the middleweight division where we've seen you before? How much difference did that size make? And like Tim said, you know, you really, you know, you were able to weather the storm of ONB's takedowns, keep getting back up to the feet. I mentioned inside the cage, your head movement was tremendous. That was something that really stood out to me. But, you know, but firstly, talk about the weight and how you felt there being so heavy.
Oh, I can tell a big difference from where I'm not having to cut weight. Like when I had to cut to 185, it took everything out of me. I focused on just cutting the weight instead of training. So that took a lot out of me. And then when I did cut the weight, I was so weak and tired. And I just didn't have the energy to do nothing. But with this, with the 225, where I didn't have to do nothing but just walk around at the weight I'm at, I felt so much more energetic and I had so much more strength in me. And I just felt great. I mean, I had. And I mean, because I'm walking around it this way anyway, so I just felt fantastic. Like I could just move better and I was not tired and I could always, I mean, and the strength was there. Like I could, I mean, it just felt like I was pushing him off of me like he was just lightweight, like he wasn't nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely tell that, you know, I've seen you doing the cuts to 185 and you could definitely tell that it takes a big toll on you. It really has you sucked out. And, yeah, it's one of those, weird things where I was thinking when I was watching the fight back, I was like, man, this guy may be kind of tailor made for this kind of tweener, weight class here, because, you know, you're known for your, for being a powerful, explosive, strong guy. But, you know, you're also the book on you up to this point has also been that, you know, you take him down, then, you know, you can put him on his back and you can usually grind him out and he won't be too much threat. But and you haven't had that explosiveness to keep getting up. But you're right. You did just push ONB off of you. Oh, like he was getting the takedowns, but you were just getting up really easy, it seemed like, you know. And I think that was definitely demoralizing to him, you know, expecting to be able to hold those takedowns there. But yeah, I gotta agree, man. It really seemed like you were able to just, you know, maintain that strength, which is your, you know, your calling card.
And that's another thing I was working with. It's like when I was sitting there training with coach, he would be like, use only the strength when you need it. I stayed focused and I stayed relaxed when I was with him. With all the other fights I was at, I was going in there and I was tense and just ready to hurry up and just do what I can. And I would gas out in the first round. But with this, I would stay relaxed and I just kept breathing and I was moving like I was supposed to. And the only time I used the strength was when I felt like I needed it, but I just kept it composed and I was ready for when I need it. That's the only time I would use it.
Well, it's a new generation there with Temple Underground Boxing, and you are the first man to bring home gold to that team. So first
jump down there.
Yeah. Oh, go. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. No. Hey, this is Alan Poole. Hey, how hyped up did you have Sensei after you got that belt? Because I know he stopped me while I was walking by. He was pretty stoked about that. I love seeing Sensei all hyped up like that.
Oh, he was like, I've never seen him like this, and he's still to this day. He is still talking about it. He's about it. I mean, he's still talking about where we're going to go and what we got to do to get there and what risk we got to take. And he's just he's just the future, man. He's just looking at what we can do, like what we got. He's like, you got all kind of potentials to get wherever you want to go. Depend on how much work you're willing to put in and everything. He's like, he's never seen anybody as tough as me. He's just excited, and he cannot wait. He's wanting me to go pro. I mean, he's ready for me to defend the belt now and then go straight to pro.
That's awesome, man, because it looks like you guys are starting to turn out some fighters. I mean, I'm seeing you guys all the time. I've got lots of pictures of you guys now. So I guess that's what the future holds.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got Chris Butcher. He's starting to come. And that Chris Butcher, you got to give it to him. That boy's got heart. And I love working with him, and he don't stop. And that's what I like, and that's what Temple Underground is about. We love to work with people that has heart. I mean, everybody loves to work with Chris Butcher. I love working with him, and we give it. I mean, when we step in there, we do not walk out unless we're crawling. That's about it. I mean, we are tired, and we're hurting, and we're sore. But at the end of the day, it's all worth it. And then we do our energetics at the end of the day, and that's what gives us our somewhat energy back.
Well, real quick, Lance, I'm going to give you a chance to give your shout outs. You've already given a few, but, you know, show the love where it's due. And also give us your social media plugs where we can follow you and find out what's next.
I like to give a shout out to Temple Underground, Coach G. I wouldn't have been this far without him. I'd like to give a shout out to my beautiful fiance, Jill Hope. She's been there with me from the get-go. When I just felt like I didn't want to train after work, she'd be like, no, get your butt up. We got to go. We got things to do. I'd like to give a shout out to my buddy, Matt Rhines. He's been there. He's been ride or die with me all the way through too. He's seen potential in me when nobody else has. But yeah, you can follow me on Facebook at MMA Abbott, and then also my page at Team Abbott MMA.
All right. It's Lance Abbott, the new Bar Battles Cruiserweight Champion. Keep your eyes on him, as the sky is the limit for this athlete. Lance, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
That does it for another great lineup of guests, as well as another episode of the Valor Hour. Join us next week for more discussion on the biggest news in combat sports from across the world. Please remember to share this broadcast and subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. We appreciate all the likes, but we need your shares and subscriptions. For myself, Alan Poole, and Valor Fights President Tim Lloyd, thanks so much for listening, and join us next week for another episode of the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.